Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined by Rich Rebar for our Friday Picks Against the Spread show. We pick our five favorite games against the spread. Rich and I both play in contests that use this this functionality where basically it's a facsimile of the Super Contest. Of course, we are sponsored by Underdog Fantasy. If you don't have the Underdog Fantasy app, I don't really know what you're doing with your life, but if you're not set up there yet, you can download it. You can use the link in the description to the show, promo code GRID. You can get in there for all the pick 'em contests. I've been doing those. Some people definitely licking their wounds with Christian McCaffrey leaving that game early on Thursday night, but they have NBA best ball. They got NHL best ball, and they have the Battle Royale contest, which I'm getting really into just because I love drafting. And I mean, there's nothing quite like drafting. So Underdog Fantasy, promo code GRID. Rich, we're here. Sam Darnold looks like an MVP candidate, two rushing touchdowns on Thursday night. The Panthers are 3-0. I took the Panthers actually already in my contest. They were one of my picks minus 10.5 points. Looked a little bit sketchy there for a little while. They got there in the fourth quarter. The Texans are, they are as bad as we thought. I think I feel comfortable saying that they maybe seem better coached than we thought, but the talent is just not there. There's just no talent anywhere on the roster.
No, I mean, especially on the defensive side of the ball, but they are a little bit like game on off, like on offense. Like they're not just like a complete pushover on offense. They didn't score any points yesterday, but because of Davis Mills, but you know, they actually are a little bit functional. They're not like a turnover like sieve, you know, like is what I think people were expecting, you know, at least from like, you know, fantasy scene. It's like, we're going to stream all these defenses against them. But yeah, listen, they're hanging around with the Lions. They're doing the same thing, right? Like they're kind of as bad as we think they are, but they're like hanging around in some of these games. We'll probably talk about the Lions at some point during this show. But yeah, hey, it's a good start to the week. You know, DJ Moore had a nice start if you had him. Brandon Cooks keep scoring points. Hey, it was a good start, I think, for fantasy, unless you had
McCaffrey. I mean, I definitely did. I definitely did the command def search for Hubbard teams last night, though he looked like shit. I mean, to be honest.
He looked like he did
honest.
Last year at Oklahoma yeah. State. I mean, he looked bad this last year at college, too. So
he really did.
To see how that plays out. Well, the offensive line, you saw it a little bit because it was only the Houston Texans, and they haven't really faced like the Saints have a solid front, but that offensive line is bad, the Panthers. Like, it's awful. They have Cam Irving still starting in the NFL, you know, Pat Elflein, like it's a bad offensive line. And I don't know if like a guy that's not the caliber of talent like Christian McCaffrey is really going to produce a lot of, you know, efficiency behind that offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I also think, you know, the other thing is even when Mike Davis subbed in last year, people remember Mike Davis being really good for fantasy, but he really only was for about six games.
Yes.
Then they started playing Trenton Cannon. Rodney Smith, I believe, was the name of the other running back that they were playing. And if Hubbard looks like if they go and I don't know who they play next week, but if they go into their week four game,
the Cowboys.
Oh man. Yeah. I think the Hubbard people are going to get burnt because they're going to go into that game. They're going to be down 10 points and they're going to start playing Royce Freeman some, and then you're just going to be like, great. I have Sam Darnold's timeshare running back. Like that's never been a profitable sentence in the history of fantasy football. So, I mean, obviously you feel good if you have Hubbard, like if you already have Hubbard on your rosters, you're feeling fine, but he is not going to be the slam dunk that Mike Davis was, which feels like a weird sentence. 'Cause I thought Hubbard was going to be a good NFL player.
Yeah, I mean, he was a really weird prospect. I mean, he had that just amazing 2019 season, and then last year kind of comes back in the doghouse, just not really productive at all. We kind of seen like he was a home run or bust guy, right? Like, you know, if he doesn't have like a 60-yard touchdown run, then what are you getting? So we haven't really seen that yet in the NFL, but maybe he'll pop some. You never know. But yeah, listen, if you draft him and took a dart throw as the non-McCaffrey drafter, you've at least got something. And we're all grasping for a little bit of running back production wherever we can get it on these rosters.
Every team. And do you have one team where you're not? I have one team with Pete and with Pat where we have Jonathan Taylor, Chase Edmonds, Elijah Mitchell, and Tyson Williams. And I think of all of my high stakes teams, that's the single team I have that is not grasping for running back production, like where I'm like not sweating it.
I have a football guys championship team that I drafted with John Daigle, and we started Derrick Henry, Aaron Jones. So that's like the only one, like that's one of the few. And then when we get to week 13, we're going to have a bye because both those guys are on bye. But for week two, they got us a lot of points. But that's like the one thing, because remember Aaron Jones, that slide, there was like a month period where I just drafted Aaron Jones like every draft because he was going a second round on FFPC. And even on Underdog, he was going in the mid second. So I was, there was that period where I was just hammering Aaron Jones. He was like the gift for that whole period of like June through like the end of July.
Going to be a huge mistake for me. I was not capitalizing there. Like I have like right about probably 8-9% Aaron Jones, like right in line with the field, but not enough. And that's going to be pretty painful.
I think we talked about it on one of your summer podcasts, like after it all happened, like just where we both were.
Cause I was the AJ Dillon guy. I was taking AJ, and it just looks like that's not going to happen. I mean, maybe it'll get there, but it's not happening right now. The AJ Dillon stuff is not happening.
No, if you saw that game on Monday night, it was, and you were high on bullish on Aaron Jones, and like there's no trepidation to be needed on AJ Dillon right now.
No. All right. Let's get to it. Let's pick some games against the spread, and I'll go ahead and let you start. You can go with your number five.
I'm going to start with the Titans, just based on, I don't think Wentz is going to play. We're going to get some kind of combination of Brett Hundley and Jacob Eason. Jacob Eason was a really poor quarterback prospect, turnover machine in college. He was 58th percentile of all prospects in completion rate too. So a little inefficiency. We saw him throw the interception at the end of that game. Not really sure we're going to get there. I will say this. We've been doing this show now. This is the third year we've done these picks.
I know. It's amazing.
And, you know, I bring this up every year, though, is that in what a little bit worries is like, so 0-2 teams have historically been a great bet. I bring it up every year on this show. The past decade, they hit it about 60% in terms of if you want to bet on those teams. Last year, it was a dead even split, so you didn't see that kind of a split. But from like a trend stance, you know, typically 0-2 teams are undervalued. So it is kind of going against that. You know, it's giving points for with a Titans defense that I think is really awful. But I think they'll get enough stops here without, you know, Carson Wentz playing. You never see the injury reports ankles with plural. You know, you really don't see that one very often where both ankles are hurt. That's really just short and sweet, man. I'm just going to fade Brett Hundley and Jacob Eason.
Yeah. And honestly, even if double ankles Wentz plays, I'm not really sweating it either. Cause this just feels like a spot where like Derrick Henry is going to be like a popular cash game DFS play this week, which does not happen very often. Like it is just a nut spot for the Titans. You know, and AJ Brown and Julio Jones too. So this one, not on my list, but I have no problem with it. My number five is the Bears plus 7.5 points. And the reason why I like the Bears is one, I think that Fields is much better than Andy Dalton. And this line seems like if Andy Dalton was the quarterback, the line would be the same way. Now, Fields is going to have, I will say, he will either take a terrible sack that was so bad that you can't even believe that he took it when he should have done literally anything else, or he's going to throw an interception so bad that it's going to melt your brain. Like I don't,
both.
Yeah. I don't think the Bears will win outright, but getting the hook here feels very good because we saw a glimpse of it last week with Fields, which is just like, he's just going to Houdini himself out of so many situations. Like he's just going to like, oh, it's 3rd-and-9 and the linebacker is on Damian Williams or something when he should be looking at Fields and Fields. Right. We see Lamar do this. We used to see Dak do this, not so much this season. We see Josh Allen do this. It's just guys who are that dynamic. It's just hard for them to get really blown out if they're not turning the ball over. And maybe this will be stupid and Fields is going to have three interceptions and I'm going to feel like a giant jackass, but the hook here, I feel this should be 6.5 to me is basically, I'm looking at this line and I'm like, the Browns should be 6.5 here. So especially because the Bears defense is so bad in the secondary and the Browns are not going to take advantage of that. Like they're not going to be throwing the ball around the yard. Like Austin Hooper is going to get 8 targets here. Like they're not going to make them pay for having that weak secondary.
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland's been 7-point favorites or higher under Kevin Stansky 4 times. They are 4-0 in those games. They're 1-3 against the spread. They'll let you hang around a little bit. You got the mobile quarterback factor. I mean, Fields is the wild card, right? Andy Dalton threw 1 pass further than 15 yards downfield. 1 so far stuck to year. His ADOT was 4.6 yards. I mean,
Fields threw an absolute bullet to two actually bullets to Darnell Mooney. One Mooney dropped and the second was a completion. And like you kind of saw a little bit of everything with Fields in that game, right? He throws the terrible interception. Like I don't know if anyone saw the interception that he threw, but that was like a Zach Wilson interception. And then you also saw he's rolling out off his wrong foot, total dart to Mooney. He ran 10 times on like, I think he played 33 snaps or something like that.
Yeah, three were kneel downs, but I went back and I tweeted this out yesterday, but I went back even through his dropbacks in the preseason. So he's had 83 dropbacks in the preseason through now, and he scrambled on 14 of them, which is 16.9%. For context, Jalen Hurts led the league in scramble rate last year at 13.5%. So like this offensive line's not good. He's going to run around. He's definitely going to move around. I think he's 5,200 on DraftKings. He might even get you the bonus there. I'm not even sure. He's got a shot at it. I think you're right. I think this one's not on my list, but I definitely could see them, you know, keeping it within a touchdown, even backdooring it, you know.
I'm just imagining the backdoor, right? Browns are up 13 points going into the fourth quarter. They're just chilling.
Yeah, right? 27-14 or something.
27-14. And Fields runs one in last minute. Like that's basically exactly what I am seeing in my mind's eye here. So
it would have been interesting if Tyrod doesn't get hurt in that game last week. It would have been interesting to see how that game would have unfolded second half.
They covered anyway, right? Like they covered with Davis Mills.
Yes. Yes. But I mean, they who knows if they would have been a chance to win it outright. I mean, at the half, it was a game.
Yeah. Yeah, no, which
I feel
crazy.
Bad for Tyrod, man. I do too, because this might have been his last real shot, and he still might get it back in a couple weeks if he's all right. But he was playing really well for 6 quarters. He played a really great 6 quarters of football on what could have been potentially his last chance to be a starting quarterback for a full season. So I do feel bad that the injury occurred on a touchdown. Basically, he hurt himself on a touchdown run.
On a touchdown, yeah.
Yeah, so
got like almost no one has been more snake bitten than him. It's real sad.
Yeah, I mean, going back to last year, just a complete fluke.
Yeah. All right, what's your number 4?
My number 4 is the Chargers +7. Just kind of feels like this line is way too high.
This one is on my list too. I mean, you know, I hate to do it, but it's on my list too.
Well, so the Chiefs now have covered in one of their past 10 regular season games.
Because I mean, unreal. It's unreal how
much Vegas is just laughing. Like Vegas is just laughing because you know they're just pouring in public money on the Chiefs like every weekend, and the Chiefs have covered one of their past 10 games. This one just feels way too high, man. To get a full touchdown here feels pretty wild because that's where it's bumped up to now. I mean, it's 6.5 in some spots, so maybe you'll get beat, but it's already up to 7 in a lot of places. The Chargers are averaging a league high 48 yards per offensive possession, but they just can't put the ball in the end zone. They're 31st in red zone conversion rate for touchdowns. A good way to break that is facing the Chiefs, who are dead last in the NFL in red zone conversion rate stop last year, have come back this season and allowed all 8 red zone possessions the Browns and Ravens have had to be converted for touchdowns. So it seems like a good spot for the Chargers to get over these early season kind of red zone bugaboos that they've had, score some touchdowns in this game. I don't know if they outright win it, but 7, man, feels like a lot to get for a good offense.
They're not gonna outright win it. If the Chiefs start the season 1-2, I mean, it's gonna be big. I will say this: if they lose this game, pile on Mahomes to win the MVP. Like, because Mahomes
just go nuts.
He probably drops to like 7-1, and Brady becomes the favorite, I would imagine. And then, but there's no playing games. If you start the season 1-2 as the Chiefs, like there's no more, you know, like fooling around with these Byron Pringle targets. It's just going to be like, we gotta get to business. So there's an angle here. If the Chiefs lose this game outright, check your book for Mahomes MVP odds. All right. My number 4 is the Patriots -3 points against the New Orleans Saints. Thinking here, we saw that great performance in week 1 from the Saints, and that looks like it's going to be an all-time anomaly because they look so bad last week. They have they have 2 big issues. 1, the defense is just like mostly old and they can't really get stops. I don't know what happened in that Packers game, but they just have no playmakers on offense, right? It's like, it's Kamara and that's it. Callaway, no good, right? Troutman, not a thing. Juwan Johnson, not a thing. Deontay Harris, no good. Like they just have no above average skill position players. So even if it's true that Jameis is playing better, and even if it's true that Jameis has learned under Sean Payton and is playing like a better like ball control style and everything, there's no one to make it happen with because they have no good skill position players. And Belichick's going to know exactly what to do against Jameis. Like these are the types of games that exactly what they did against the Jets last week. They just chewed Zach Wilson up and out.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've been trying to sell this for a couple of weeks. I've been way short on the Saints big picture. I don't think they're a very good football team. I think they could potentially be an average football team, but they are what the Patriots were last year. That's exactly what we have with the Saints. Like they've got like an okay defense, and they've got just a bunch of vagabonds on offense outside of Alvin Kamara. Like there's just a bunch of dudes, and maybe in the midseason when they get Michael Thomas back, this thing will look a little bit different, but that's what I said. There's no way I was buying that week 1 performance on offense. It was weird game script. They didn't really even ask Jameis Winston to do anything, even though he had the 5 touchdowns. He wasn't really asked to do anything in that game. And when he's asked to do something like last week, you see that's when the old Jameis like comes back, right? Like when he's pressed to fire and he's got to actually make plays with a bunch of limited playmakers, you get results like last week. I've been short on them. Maybe it'll come back on me, but I've been kind of, you know, short on them consistently. And I've been tying that into Alvin Kamara and we'll see if it comes back to bite me or not. But I've been short on Alvin Kamara too.
See, I was not short on Alvin Kamara, and for 1/2 of football against the Packers, it looked like I was going to be right. He had 17 or 18 touches in the first half against the Packers, and I was like, Alvin Kamara with Derrick Henry's workload is like better than Christian McCaffrey, but you know the issue is that they're just not going to be good enough. I mean, maybe something will change. Maybe we'll learn something about them in this game, and this pick will be wrong, and Sean Payton will have been in the lab and figured things out. You know, that certainly is in the realm of possibilities, but it does not look particularly rosy for Alvin Kamara right now.
Yeah, that's the one out, is you hope that just Sean Payton is smart enough to figure this thing out. And like, maybe it was just more of an out. Maybe they're in between what we saw week 1 and week 2, right? Like you had a super anomaly in one direction and then the floor version of it last week. And maybe they're somewhere in the middle, but this is a team I've always thought was going to really struggle offensively. And we've kind of, even like I said, even that Packers game, like it's not like they were good on offense.
They were just lucky.
They just had a bunch of really kind of a lot of favorable game script. Joe Barry, also the Packers defense is probably not that great, but I'm going to talk about the Packers. I've got them next on mine.
Packers are my number 1. So okay. we can go there. So wait, your number 3 is the Packers?
Yeah, my number 3 is the Packers.
Okay. My number 1 is the Packers. Not only are they going to cover, but they're going to win this game, and they're going to win this game. They're going to win this game by a lot. This is going to be, I think that this is going to be the game that we see the end of the Jimmy Garoppolo era, that it just gets to a point where he's going to have to try and match Rodgers drive for drive, and he's just going to be skipping bounce passes at Kyle Juszczyk's feet?
I mean, so Kyle Shanahan is the since he's been there at the 49ers, they're the worst home favorite. 5-11-1 against the spread is a home favorite. Some places you can even get the hook on this. It is down to 3 in a lot of places, but it opened at 3.5 if you can get that. I mean, I just look at this 49ers secondary, and there's just too many holes. And it's fine when you face Jared Goff and Jalen Hurts, but when you face Aaron Rodgers, it's going to be probably a little bit of a different story. And we've seen Rodgers kind of a better version of the secondary that wasn't a better version of his defense, because the 49ers were out multiple, you know, defensive line starters when these teams played a year ago. But Rodgers absolutely roasted them in that game. I feel like the Packers outright win this one too. The only thing that concerns me is that the Packers defense, which we just started to like this. Joe Barry's brought over the same kind of, you know, what Brandon Staley wants to do. They want to run a lot of shell coverage, play, give you a lot of light boxes, try to, you know, and then try to have their, you know, their safeties fill run fits. And they're just teams that their personnel's just not good enough to do it. Like we've seen, you know, the Rams team from last year, even the Chargers team right now do that, even though, you know, the teams are running on the Chargers. And it'll be interesting to see how that Clyde Edwards-Helaire thing plays out, because they're going to invite you to run. And, you know, he's become like a punching bag this week. But back to the Packers have one sack through two games, and they have the league lowest pressure rate.
And so, that's like by design, like they don't even want to pressure the quarterback.
And so that's like my one thing, you know, here that could like come back if Kyle Shanahan can just devise a good enough game plan. And he's done it plenty of times against the Packers to really give it. And he's done it against like this style of defense, because the 49ers gave the Rams fits the past couple of years. Like I think they've won 4 in a row against the Rams. I might be wrong on that, but they definitely won both last year with Garoppolo and then Nick Mullins. But you know, so Shanahan knows how to game plan for this style of defense. So it's like the one concern is they're not going to rush Garoppolo and not get any pressure on him. So, you know, if you don't get pressure on him, he can be a functional quarterback. So that's the one concern, but I do think the Packers will outright win.
Yep. All right. My number 3, Las Vegas Raiders minus 4 points. I mean, what more do you need to see? Like, the Dolphins were already a little bit worse than we thought they were anyway. Like, I had very high expectations relative to the market for the Miami Dolphins coming into the season. I thought they could win that division. I thought they could maybe be better than the Bills. Tua gets hurt. Tua is not playing in this game. I've seen a lot of Jacoby Brissett football throughout the years. You know, Patriots, Colts, I've seen it all. He is the definition of like a C-minus quarterback, right? Like he's not terrible. Like this is not like a Tom Savage situation, but he's never adding any win probability. Like there's never a time where like Jacoby Brissett's going to go out and win you a game. The defense doesn't look as good as we thought it was going to be. The offensive line seems like it's going to be a problem. You know, Tua got smoked. Brissett actually took a couple shots in that game and got through it against the Bills. And I don't know if I buy this like Derek Carr renaissance, but at least they're playing a more optimal brand of football where they're pushing the ball down the field a little bit more. Now, Peyton Barber did get 13 carries last week. That's pretty far away from optimal. But I mean, the Raiders definitely seem better than the preseason market expectations for them.
Yeah. You know, you look at Jacoby Brissett, and I mean, he's so big, he was able to even get away from some of those pressures. He was pressured on 60% of his dropbacks when he came in the game last week. He was sacked or hit on 25%. And the one thing the Raiders have been good at defensively so far to open the year is getting pressure on the quarterback. They're 4th in the league in pressure rate, and they've actually blitzed at the league's lowest rate. 4.9% is all they've blitzed at. So they're getting home with 4, which is, you know, always a problem for any quarterback. If you can get home with 4, drop back and play coverage. Yeah, I mean, I'm not really touching this game because the fit is here. Like, Brissett's like an all right deep thrower, but like you have to have time to throw deep. And if you saw that game last week, I mean, that Dolphins offensive line was just getting wrecked. I mean, I have no problem with this one. You know, with Derek Carr being hurt, hopefully he's all right. This sample goes back into last year where Derek Carr's been a good player. It's against good defenses. I will give Gruden some credit. I mean, he does a lot of things that we don't like, but I mean, they have like run like functional offense and a functional offensive scheme at least since he's been there. So that's like one positive.
Oh, I was on mute. This is not one of your games, but are you on this side? Like, do you think this is just a growth? Like, I guess I could see this one.
I mean, I know it's dropped a little bit, but it's still at what, 45? Is it 45 and a half? It's 45 and a half still. So yeah, I mean, I would be on the under that. I mean, the Dolphins just went under in a game where the other team scored 35 points.
Like, yeah. Tough scenes. Tough scenes. All right. So what's your number two?
My number two is the Cardinals. It would be higher if I trusted Cliff, but maybe the back door here is open, but 7 points.
That was why I didn't make my list. I mean, if this was 6.5, I might even make it my number one, but it's just like, I have no faith in Cliff to close the game out effectively. And Trevor Lawrence has real Bortles potential here where he's going to score a lot. Like, how many touchdown passes is Trevor Lawrence going to have with under 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, down 10 points, like at least four?
I mean, so the thing with Lawrence right now is just like, he's got the ghost thing, right? So he's averaging 3.9 yards per pass attempt through 2 weeks under pressure. Only Jameis Winston is worse. He against the blitz right now, Trevor Lawrence is 2 of 13 passing against the blitz. Well, with two interceptions, 3.2 yards per pass attempt. The Cardinals blitz at the 11th highest rate. They will bring heat. So, like, I mean, this is here is just all we're worried about, this backdoor. Kyler is going to go absolutely nuclear against this defense. This Jaguars defense is horrendous. It was horrendous all of last year. They really haven't done anything to fix that. We've got injured cornerbacks. They might be getting Trey Herndon back, but CJ Henderson now is hurt. So, I mean, it's going to be another bonanza for Kyler here doing baby Yodas in the end zone.
Yeah. Where do you stand on Shark, Marvin Jones, Chenault? Are we just set up for another year of Marvin Jones outproducing younger, more exciting players? I mean, the average depth of target stuff for Chenault has been very discouraging through two games. And I don't know if I trust Urban Meyer to fix that.
No, I mean, listen, I came on with you in the summer about the Chenault thing, and, you know, it's the same thing. Like, everyone looks at these player comps because of his size and his athletic profile, but he doesn't play that way. He's Deebo Samuel. And that's how he's going to be used. I mean, everyone constantly wants to look at his physical profile and say, oh, this dude he comps to Dez Bryant. Like, he doesn't play that way. Like, eventually, like, we have to get out of the spreadsheet and just look at how the dude actually plays and how he's utilized. And that's what we have with Chenault. I mean, I think that he can still be like a fine floor PPR guy. But this is the same thing we've just been echoing throughout the summer. And I'm sorry that it hurts the ship chasing guys who won't even listen to this, but it's okay.
It hurts me. I mean, Chenault is like one of my three most drafted guys. So the way I think that Chenault ends up sucking out is that Chenault turns into the blitz hot read guy. And he just is averaging like 5.5 receptions per game.
The targets have still been there. Like, he's still getting seven plus looks. And I think he'll get those per game. I think he's going to be a good PPR guy still, a solid PPR guy.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And all that would have to change would be for him to start getting some red zone stuff and for them to be a competent enough offense where red zone stuff even happens and matters and is important, right? Like, that is a big issue, is that this is not a team that's scoring, you know, 24 points a game or whatever, and has multiple opportunities inside the red zone to generate those looks. Like, it's a big problem that Trevor Lawrence does not look like he's going to have that big rising tide lifts all boats influence on that offense. Like, it looks like one of the three wide receivers is going to get there on a weekly basis instead of two of the three, which is, you know, kind of what the market was expecting.
Yeah, old man Marv still just sucking up these end zone targets.
I will say, the touchdown that Marvin Jones scored last week, absolute dime from Trevor Lawrence. That had to have been one of his best throws as a professional. Well,
did you see? So the first drive last week, Trevor Lawrence is five of seven, 73 yards and a touchdown. They go right down the field on the Broncos. Looks the part, right? And the rest of the game, 9 of 26 for 45 yards the rest of the game. We didn't even get the garbage blitz against the Broncos. You'll get some of that against the Cardinals. You'll get some garbage juice here.
All right. So my number two, this is probably going to be controversial, but it's the Rams getting 1.5 at home. I think that the Rams are fully healthy. I think they're the better roster, right? Because they have the more impactful defensive players, which is not to say that the Buccaneers don't have impactful defensive players at all. But, you know, Aaron Donald, best defensive player in the league. Jalen Ramsey, probably one of the best cornerbacks in the league. I don't know the cornerback stuff that well. And Stafford is, through two games, he's doing what everyone projected, right? Everyone said, okay, he's that much better than Jared Goff. The Rams are going to be that much better. Now, defenses have just completely forgotten that Cooper Kupp has existed. Cooper Kupp's two touchdowns this year, was literally uncovered. I mean, the touchdown he scored last week, no one was within probably 15 yards of him.
Well, Cynthia Freeland tweeted this out, that he's the only player to have multiple touchdowns already where no one's within 5 yards of him.
Yeah. Like, and it's like really insane. Like, no one was even close to him. But Robert Woods is doing the same thing that he's always done. Higbee looks like he is up to the task of being a full-time tight end. Van Jefferson has surprised me a little bit by playing more than DeSean Jackson. I assumed that they would play DeSean Jackson over Van Jefferson until he got hurt. So that's probably a positive. Now, of course, Godwin, Mike Evans, and Rob Gronkowski is a more talented wide receiver core. But the Rams also are not going to be stubborn running the ball, which is a huge advantage. Like, they're going to come into this game, and if Sony Michel or Daryl Henderson, depending on who's healthy, is starting out getting stoned, they're just going to be like, whatever, we'll throw 70% of the time. We don't care. That's been a big change from the Goff offense to the Stafford offense through two games, is the Rams are way above pass rate, above expectation. And they're the home team, which, you know, I mean, how much does that stuff really matter? It's hard to say, but I feel like the Buccaneers being favored on the road here is just like, that's gotta be like a Brady distortion effect.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. And if you were to pick a game for the Bucs to potentially lose, this would probably be one of the better ones for them to kind of circle. Brady had his worst game against the Rams last year by far. Worst completion rate, lowest yards per pass attempt. You know, he started off really hot this year, but has also played the Cowboys and Falcons. So that kind of goes into it too. And he's been good going back to last year. But you're right about McVay did this last year. The Rams beat them last year, and they beat him in Tampa. And McVay let Jared Goff drop back 51 times, and Jared Goff threw for 380 yards in that game. Stafford's dropped back just 59 total times in two games on the season. The two quarterbacks faced the Bucs so far have dropped back 62 and 48 times. Like, they're gonna wing it around. We'll see what happens. I was on with Hulk yesterday, and I thought, based on projected ownership, that Stafford was my favorite play of the weekend. So we'll see like what the ownership looks like maybe tomorrow morning. But he's my favorite DFS quarterback play of the week. So I think that he's going to basically rival his season long drop back total of 59. I think he's got a shot to get 85-90% of that in this game.
You're saying Brady or Stafford?
Stafford.
Yeah. So that Brady is actually in our top optimals right now, because we have them projected to score 75% of their touchdowns via the pass. I mean, you know, how much will the absence of Antonio Brown hurt their passing game? It'll hurt a little bit, but I mean,
Scotty, he was the guy I wanted to run back with these stacks. So him being out kind of threw a wrench in my plan.
Yeah. Well, what can you do? So there we go. That is a couple of the other games I liked. I like the Seahawks -1.5 points at the Vikings. Just feels like the Seahawks are a better team. You know, I don't know. It's just, I guess it's kind of the same line as the Rams Buccaneers one, but the Seahawks look good in their, I mean, their defense is not particular. I mean, their defense is really bad. They really let the Titans catch up with them last week.
But, I mean, the Vikings are one of those weird teams, though. They could easily be 2-0 minus a play or two.
Yep.
You know, Dalvin Cook fumbles in overtime as they're going to set up that field goal. Greg Joseph misses not only the game winning field goal, but he missed an extra point in that game, which would have had it be a tie game at that point. They're one of those teams that just left a couple plays on the field early in the game. So they might be a live 0-2 dog, but I definitely like Seattle more than them.
Yeah. So for DFS this week, you're heavy on that. You like the Rams Buccaneers game. Stafford Cup, Higbee, bring it back with Godwin.
Yeah, I like that. I think you're gonna have to get a little unique. While it looks like Stafford's a unique way to get at that game, that, like I said, I don't know, it could change. It's, you know, I didn't pull up project ownership today to see if there's any like kind of oscillation any there, but he was looking at from a quarterback stance, a unique way to get at this game. Obviously, I think the field's too sharp now. Like, we're gonna see a lot of people play Robert Woods this week. especially with all these dropbacks. I mean, he still came back. He ran a route on 97% of team dropbacks last week, had the 9 targets. I think we'll see Justin Jefferson, DK Metcalf, and Robert Woods all be popular kind of flop lag plays this week. The field's too sharp now. Those guys all be popular. I think Van Jefferson's a unique way to get at a stack in this game because he's so cheap and he's been on the field so much. He's only had 3 targets in each game, but I just talked about the dropbacks being reduced because of the game scripts. Like if you get them to double their dropbacks, those 3 targets now turn into 6 to 7 targets in a game where they're dropping back. So if you get into the paint at his cheap pricing, he's another unique way to get at. I think a lot of people play Higbee. I think he'll be popular.
Higbee is the one I think actually probably gets under-owned because I feel like people use Gronk from that game. Like we're better at not being so results oriented, but that stuff is not, it's not completely.
Maybe with AB being out now, it does go to more Gronk. Cause I thought AB was going to be the optimal bring back. He was the guy like in the game plan last year, he had the 13 targets against the Rams. Jalen Ramsey's been playing like basically sub linebacker in the slot now. So he's going to see Godwin the most, although he's not going to be like manned up on him. But I thought a lot of signal early on was going to be Antonio Brown as the bring back, especially with his price too being good. But now with him being out, I'm not going to play Scotty Miller. So do you default go to Evans? Because the Bucs are a tough team to figure out. Like you said, Gronk's had the 2 touchdowns, 2 games in a row, 3 games in a row if you go back to the Super Bowl. And it's like, yeah, so who's the bring back on the Bucs side? I've had a tough time diagnosing that. Mike Evans is kind of a direct pivot salary wise from like DK Metcalf, who's going to be really popular, I think, this weekend. So maybe it's him, but it's tough to diagnose going into the game, like what Bucs guy has like an optimal advantage here.
Yeah. And running back in DFS this week is kind of,
CMC, like Aaron Jones on Sunday Night Football. We got to wait on this Dalvin Cook information. Now DraftKings was on it on Alexander Mattison. Like they priced Alexander Mattison up. FanDuel didn't, so we'll see what kind of goes on there, because he'll be popular at least on FanDuel, but at least DraftKings he won't be as much of a slam dunk. Like he's priced higher than Antonio Gibson on DraftKings, and definitely way higher than the ghost of CEH. DraftKings is definitely begging you to play some Clyde Edwards-Helaire this week.
Yeah, I might do it. I don't know. I think you should.
So before I try to talk about this on our show, before it even became like a bit or being contrarian this week, because everyone's been dunking on CEH. You just talk about this a game plan with Brandon Staley, right? Like Brandon Staley wants you to run the football. We talked about this with the Cowboys last week at Zeke. Like Brandon Staley is going to give you light boxes. He wants you to check into runs, and both teams have done it. Washington, Antonio Gibson faced 8 in the box on 5% of his carries. Dallas last week revolved their whole game plan. They came in with an entire game plan built on running a combo back system and exploiting these light boxes. They had a light box in just 5 of 29 carries. So far, 2 through games, running backs have carried the ball 52 times for 287 yards and 2 touchdowns against the Chargers. They want you to run the football, and they're definitely going to invite the Chiefs to run the football. So, I mean, before it even became like a bit and even being contrarian where he had this goofy pricing, I was already looking at it of like, oh, well, this is going to be the best spot he's been in for the opening 3 weeks, like for the Chiefs to actually try to run the football. But now it's turned into like this weird thing now because DraftKings made him 4,800 and the same price as Jeremy McNichols.
I might play Clyde Edwards-Helaire in cash this week and just hope he scores a touchdown. If he scores a touchdown, yeah, your goal.
I mean, yeah, if he scores a touchdown or even catches 4 passes, like he doesn't have to do anything with them. Like, and if you get any, because the Chiefs did show last year, they at least were willing when you gave them a bunch of 2 high safety looks, like they would run it if they were being effective at it. We saw it against Houston. We saw it against the Bills. It just depends. If they come out and they're not effective at it early, they either come out of it and just have to throw, like they'll just scheme around it because they're running 2 high safeties against the Chiefs. Like it's commonplace for them. Like they did that all last year, but they will acquiesce if they're running the ball well. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I think it's a joke that they made him that price because DraftKings has been so sharp, and they're so sharp this week in terms of pricing for the first time. And then they give you that one. Cause you have him at 4,800 on DK and they're just saying, well, you have to play him in cash. And then FanDuel's like, hey, we made Saquon 6K. Go ahead.
It feels like Barkley. I mean, even on DraftKings, Barkley is 6,800. Like it just feels like you just play Barkley and you play CH. I mean, Fournette is also getting into our optimals, but that feels just as fragile. Like Fournette versus CH, like both of those feel extremely fragile. So it's just like, I don't know who could say which one is the play.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that they're just like, they, when you price a dude that's on the field for 75% of snaps and is the same price as I said, Jerry McNichols.
Yeah.
And plays on the best offense in the NFL. I just feel bad because, you know, it's like, you know, it's become such a bit this week, the CH thing.
Yeah. But I mean, I don't know. I feel like I do probably end up playing him in the end. What can you do?
4,800, man. It's 4,800. Yeah. I've played worse guys.
I have definitely played worse guys. What if what if Daryl Henderson doesn't play? What would you be doing with Sony?
Nothing. Just like I said, these teams played last year. The Rams running backs ran 16 times for 46 yards. They've never really involved their running backs in the passing game since Gurley left either. So like, there's not even really an out there. I think it's going to be a heavy Cup Woods. Van Jefferson get Higby game. I think they're going to wing it around to those guys. I think Sony, I don't really know how to play it though, because you have this Daryl Henderson injury, and it's the same injury I believe Cam Akers had last year, and he ended up missing two games. But you also don't want Daryl Henderson to be in the situation where he comes back and the Rams are like, well, he already got hurt when we gave him 100% of snaps. Maybe we got him back.
That's what you really don't want. Cause Henderson was looking like a huge win for people who were getting him in the fifth and sixth round of these main events, which is I took him in the fifth round and the sixth round in.
Because the one thing you have to say too is, even going back to the end of last season, it's like Sony Michel has not looked bad at all. Even when he came in the game last week, he looked pretty serviceable and pretty solid. So maybe we won't see the 100% Daryl Henderson when he does return, or if he does play. But I mean, I'm not touching these backs this week. Maybe you get a pass interference to the end zone or a ball at the 1 yard line, you luck box into a touchdown. But the teams don't run on the Bucs, and we've seen it again this year. Like, they have the highest pass rate teams against them in neutral, you know, game script. So I expect McVay to do it. He did it last year at Goff, and it was a Goff of all people. Like, now that you have Stafford, like, hell, don't even run the ball at all.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. Just don't. Which we're seeing more and more teams do, right? I mean, we are just seeing teams basically completely abandon the run. Are you worried about Josh Allen at all? Like, or just in general, are you worried about Josh Allen's lack of efficiency and lack of deep ball success through two games?
Well, it's not his lack of a deep ball success. It goes back to the same thing we talked about. We talked about it all offseason. So even last year when he won the MVP award, he was still really bad under pressure, if you could pressure him. He was 35th in differential from yards per pass from a clean pocket to getting pressure. And he's been pressured on 40% of his dropbacks to start the season. That's the seventh highest among quarterbacks. And under pressure, he's completed 35% of his passes for 4.1 yards per pass attempt. Against the blitz, he's 6 of 18, 3.6 yards per pass attempt. Teams are getting home on Josh Allen, and that ties into the deep ball. The reason his deep balls come down is you can't throw deep when you're just getting wrecked, man. You're getting pressure.
Right.
Nobody can throw deep. So that's just tied in. Like, that's kind of correlation to it, right? Everyone keeps talking about the deep, but that's just correlation to his pressure splits. And last year, even when he was excellent, he was still kind of, he kind of reverted to the old Josh Allen under pressure. So they're going to have to protect him a little bit better, come up with a little bit more scheme, because this offensive line hasn't played well the first 2 weeks. Now, day 135, nothing last week with all this happening. So as a team level, like, they're still kind of getting by here, and they're going to be fine. But, you know, and if they don't have the block punt in the Steelers game, maybe they win that game outright too. But they've got to protect him a little bit better. And this probably isn't the spot to do it, because Washington's been dialing up a lot of blitzes, and they can get home with that defensive front. For even the letdown that they've been to defensively, they can still get pressure on the quarterback. So we'll see how it is. I mean, definitely another game to look at. I'm lower than the market on him. I'll even look at some industry rankings this week, but I'm not outright like streaming for him yet. Like, I'm still going to play him if I drafted him. I'm not going to like play Fields for him or Teddy Bridgewater. I'm going to give him another week at least.
Yeah. All right, man. Tell people Sharp Football, what worksheet, the pod, that how'd my streamers do? I remember being on Elijah Mitchell. I think I took Tua though, who got injured in that game.
Yeah. But so you had Hollywood, you had Hollywood Brown, which was a smash. We go in the weeds on these picks. So we're looking, you know, a lot of podcasts talk about good players. We talk about players that might be in good spots that you want to get in your lineup. So hitting on usually like 2 of 4 is always good. You got bummed on the Tua knocked out of the game, but you had, who else did you have? You
had Naheem Hines. I had Elijah who did, Naheem Hines. Yeah, gross. Man, really, they really messed it up.
And I was the same boat though, because I stacked Waddle with your Tua, but I had Kirk Cousins, who was awesome. And so it was kind of one of those like mixed bags, but that's how it is. You give some people some opportunities, or maybe some guys they're looking at, they're like, do I play this guy? You try to give them some data points to kind of help them get on the fence or off the fence. So it was still a positive showing.
Yeah. All right, there we go. So who was on the pod this week?
I had Dwayne McFarland on this week. He was excellent. If you don't follow Dwayne, I mean, he's a great in-game tweeter, one of the best in-game follows. Who's dropping a lot of, you know, snap shares, what situations guys are playing in. So definitely check that out.
Yeah. All right. There we go. Everyone, check out the Sharp Football Podcast. Check out Sharp Football Analysis, all of that good stuff. Follow Reebs on Twitter. Make sure you download Underdog Fantasy. Use the promo code GRID. Get yourself a free wager inside of their pick 'em game. And we'll be back next week.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.